Hare Krishna. Before I start today's podcast, just like to draw listeners' attention to articles where you'll find a paper by the Lines of Authority team or committee, of which I was part of. Some of the whole list of devotees who participated there, they're written on the names are on the paper, and which is something that's been worked on for quite some years, and which has as its theme how the guru, Diksha Guru, works within the institution, interacts within the institution, particularly with the leadership and management. It's a topic that I've discussed different times before, but here's the official ISKCON stand on that. And like other papers or position papers, points of theology or resolutions, it's an important thing for devotees in society to be aware of. I think it's very informative, and devotees will find it useful in their own Krishna consciousness. And today's podcast is a little different than that subject or that topic. Just before I sat down for this podcast, I was looking at the news, and I was sort of struck by the battle that's taking place in Syria's largest city. It's not the capital, Damascus. It appears to be not the largest city, but they said this is the commercial center called Aleppo. And this is where the rebels who are against the local rule are sort of holed up. And the city is getting surrounded by the army, and we're trying to get them out. And anyway, the battle has been going on. And what struck me was the fact that there's already 200,000 refugees who are fleeing to different countries. Generally, Turkey seems to be the nearest, and other nearby countries, or in the surrounding areas. And of course, there's a lot more people in the cities. They're going to be part of the casualties. Unfortunately, the houses are being bombed to bits. That means houses are not just living quarters, but also businesses, factories, stores, etc. And how different this is than wars that were fought even just as early as the Second World War, for the most part, although that was quite a turning point. Say more, the First World War, when two opposing forces, armies, would meet in a battlefield, rather than destroying a whole city completely. What we'll end up doing is completely destroying the infrastructure of people's lives, their economy, education, everything else that goes along with it. Armies would retreat off to a battlefield, as Bhagavad Gita begins, Dharma Kshetra, Kuru Kshetra. And the armies would fight it out there. It didn't involve the killing of innocent citizens. It didn't involve destroying cities, people's homes, schools, livelihood, disturbing. Of course, wars always disturb so many things, but at least it had a much different effect than presently, where since people, for for the most part, live in cities. An economy is based on city life, where the cities are completely destroyed, and then life more or less has to start anew with whoever ends up being the victor. Seems to be like this is one of the symptoms of Kali Yuga. They call it guerrilla warfare. Before guerrilla warfare was when people were hiding off in the jungles, just like they do in Brazil or something like that. But here, this guerrilla warfare is when opposing forces hide out in the cities. And, of course, the rebels are not as not as well equipped. They don't have as many soldiers. So one can say, well, this is what gives them a chance, because it's a little different fighting in a city. You can't get your tanks in, your heavy artillery, although that is what's going on. Even airplanes are bombing, but still it gives you better than when you're out in the open battlefield. But then that's what war's about. If you're going to start a war, then you consider these options that, well, we have a smaller army, so what's your how are you balancing that off? Once again, going back to the Pandavas and Kauravas, the Kauravas more or less outmanned the Pandavas 2-1, and they had invincible soldiers like Bhishma Dev and Dronacharya. But still, the Pandavas were confident. Of course, their confidence lay in the fact that Krishna was on their side, and therefore they weren't going to lose. In one sense, both sides lost, because there were only a handful of soldiers left at the end. But technically speaking, the Pandavas were the winners. But it took place in Kurukshetra. It was a battle. Only those were there who wanted to fight, or who were paid to fight, or conscripted to fight. So the soldiers were there. They were the fighters. And the rest of India or the world just continued on as they did before. Of course, that didn't mean that they weren't affected. They were certainly affected by it. But at least minimally, you could say, by comparison to this type of battle. And the Pandavas won, and they weren't the only ones. Of course, right now I'm sort of revisiting Indian history, but when Alexander the Great went to India, at that time there were about 200 million or 250 million people living in India, if not more. And still, he had a relatively small army, but he won. He was able to, well, he won, he got northern India. Why was he able to do that with a much smaller army? Because his army moved quickly. He had cavalry, whereas India was still embedded in their traditional ways of fighting with slow-moving elephants and chariots, large chariots that are difficult to maneuver on a battlefield. And, of course, they no longer had Arjunas and so on at the helm. So they weren't able to match Alexander. And of course, the other thing was that Alexander also was able to politicize between the different kings and princes. So many kingdoms in India who rather fought each other than fought together to fight an enemy. So in that way, the Mughals was also the same way. The number of Kshatriyas, kings, and soldiers in India at the time way outnumbered invading forces. But still, they were successful. Why? Because those many, many sources weren't able to unite together and join arms together to keep out a foreign invaders. And for the rest of the people, Srila Prabhupada makes this point, for them, they weren't so concerned who was sitting on the emperor's throne, whether it was a Mughal or an Indian although many of the Mughals were later born in India, just like Akbar, who ended up being one of the best rulers in that time. Why? Because their basics of life were provided for in either case. Although, of course, there was persecution, but then there was some persecution going on, fighting going on between all of these kingdoms and amongst the Hindus or the Indians. Things have changed, and of course, one aspect where things have really changed is that in days of yore, the Alexanders, Akbars, Arjunas, the kings were out in the battlefield leading the soldiers forward, whereas nowadays the kings or the leaders, they don't even know where they are. They're just off in hiding. So once again, this isn't what real chivalry is all about. And that is whom war was for. It was for the chivalrous. It was those who were willing to take chances, those who were willing to fight 2-1, 3-1, and so on. They knew how to work out some type of strategy, be it political or military, in order to overcome their foe. And if they couldn't, then they didn't start a war. Anyway, unfortunately, this is what's going on in Kali Yuga. People are suffering. They're suffering when there's war. They're suffering when there's peace, although they may be suffering in different ways, because the leadership is bad. Overall, bad leadership. Thus, people neither know how to live happily, even from a material point of view in the material world, and certainly they know even less about what the goal of life is and why they're here on this earth. Hare Krishna.